"That little favor," Jack said earnestly to me. I'm too young, Jack," I said helplessly, "and anyhow I was too sad."
"Touching. Most touching. You have a lyrical trend," he said, as he stroked my pink cheek with his damp hand, and then he held the door as I went out. Just then his mother called him from the kitchen, and he ran in to her. I clicked the latch tight and came out to find Baba waiting.
"Bloody clown, what did you fall over?"
She was sitting on an empty porter barrel outside the door, swinging her legs. "Your dress will get all pink paint from that barrel," I said.
"It's a pink dress, you idiot."
"I'm going home with you. I might feck a few rings." She coveted Mama's rings and was always fitting them on when she came upstairs in our house.
"No, you're not," I said firmly, but my voice was shaky.
"Yes, I am. I'm going over to get a bunch of flowers. Mammy sent over word at lunchtime to ask your mother, could I? Mammy's having tea with the Archbishop tomorrow, so we want bluebells for the table."
"Who's the Archbishop?" I asked, as we only had a bishop in our diocese.
"Who's the Archbishop? Are you a bloody Protestant or what?" she asked.
I was walking very quickly. I hoped she might get tired of me and go into the paper shop for a free read of adventure books. The woman in the paper shop was half blind, and Baba stole a lot of books from there. I was breathing so nervously that the wings of my nose got wide. "My nose is getting wider. Will it ever go back again to normal?" I asked.
"Your nose," she said, "is always wide. You've a nose like a bloody petrol pump." We passed the fair green and the market house and the rows of tumbling, musty little shops on either side. We passed the bank, which was a lovely two-story house and had a polished knocker. And then we crossed the bridge. Even on a still day like that, the noise from the river was urgent and rushing, as if it were in full flood. Soon we were out of the town and climbing the hill that led to the forge. The hill rose between the trees, and it was dark in there because the leaves almost met overhead. And it was quiet, except for the clink-clank from the forge, where Billy Toohey was beating a horseshoe into shape. Overhead, the birds were singing and fussing and twittering.
"Those bloody birds get on my nerves," Baba said, making a face up at them.
Billy Toohey nodded to us through the open window space. It was so smoky in there we could hardly see him. He lived with his mother in a cottage at the back of the forge. They kept bees, and he was the only man around who grew Brussels sprouts. He told lies, but they were nice lies. He told us that he had sent his photo to Hollywood and got a cable back to say, "Come quick, you have the biggest eyes since Greta Garbo." He told us that he dined with the Aga Khan at the Galway races and that they played a game of snooker after dinner. He told us that his shoes were stolen when he left them outside the door of the hotel. He told us so many lies and so many stories. His stories filled in the nights, the dark nights, and their colours were exotic, like the colours in the turf flames. He danced jigs and reels too, and he played the accordion very well.
"What's Billy Toohey?" she asked suddenly, as if she wanted to frighten me.
"A blacksmith," I said.
"Jesus, you're a lumping idiot. What else?"
Well, what?"
"Billy Toohey is a fly boy."
"Does he get girls into trouble?" I asked.
"No, he keeps bees," she said, and sighed. I was a dull dog.
We came to her gate, and she ran in with her school bag. I didn't wait for her. I didn't want her to come with me. The wild bees from a nest in the stone wall made a sleepy, murmuring sound, and the fruit trees outside the barber's house were shedding the last of their petals. There was a pool of white and pink petals under the apple tree, and the children stepped over the petals, crushing them with their bare feet.